Okay, first things first, let's introduce ourselves. We're kind of run down the line and talk a little bit about your individual roles at your companies. I mean, CIO is pretty self-explanatory, but how does it fit into this conversation?
Sure. So I'm the CIO at CAA, Eric Iverson, and at our company, the CISO organization also reports into my organization, so I think that would be one. And some of you know I used to also be at Sony Pictures for a long time, so I did get to live through that wonderful experience that some people know about.
Absolutely.
Martin Mazur. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer for Entertainment Partners. I also run a number of the IT functions themselves, including infrastructure operations, DevOps, and a number of physical security components.
Ben Stanbury, Content Security Officer for Amazon Studios and a couple of industry roles with TPN and CDSA. I have a number of responsibilities, not only kind of strategy relating to and tactical activities relating to protecting intellectual property, but a number of kind of production IT-oriented responsibilities as well that have IT implications.
Alex Pickering, BBC Studios. So my background is originally a marketeer, followed by 10 years in data protection privacy, and in the last kind of 3 years focused on content security. So I work for BBC Studios, which is the production, sales, and distribution arm of the BBC, which you'll know probably mostly for news, but certainly some well-known brands here, maybe Doctor Who, Killing Eve, Dancing with the Stars, and Top Gear.
All right, and we've assembled this session. Also, I think it's interesting each of your individual roles, right? You know, a global content creator, you know, streaming / content creator, platform enabler, and somebody who's obviously, you know, from a service provider perspective, is at the very end and some or very beginning, sometimes the very end. And of course, you know, CAA being the talent treasure trove in terms of dealing with the actual stars that go into these things. But it's also something that's a little bit broader. And I thought also from a global perspective, you deal with sports talent. It's not just movies and television, right? So I just thought it would be an interesting mix with the focus of HITS and the traditional IT department and us rebranding it innovation and transformation. I just thought it was important to understand how is security internally, how has that vision changed? And I'm going to pick on you first because you brought it up from your previous role and a previous issue. But how has that positioning of security changed? Because we're going to talk about individual pieces of the security pie, but when you really look at your IT infrastructure, what's been the evolution in terms of where security sits in the matter? Because a lot of times it's also sectioned over and you've got an information security department that's really knee-deep in it. But I'm thinking more in terms of an enculturation or also, you know, onboarding new systems, onboarding new employees. We're just going to have a conversation up here. So anybody can feel free to chime in. You're sitting close, and so.
Well, nice to sit close to you. And for everyone in the audience, this is the non-accent part of the panel.
Yes, we divided it up.
And if there was any other questions, this shirt was actually made through quantum computing, I think. So just to tie it all together for everybody.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I think you know, when we were working on talking about this panel, one thing that I think might resonate with everybody in the room, because probably not everybody in the room is part of a CISO organization. So I'm going to take a little bit different view on that, which is behavior. So I would say if you look at how we've looked at cybersecurity over the last 15 years, probably, and content security, so one that cares about both, you go 15 years ago, that was like our problem. Like it was a technology problem and the CISO organization problem. And it's still our problem. But I definitely think with privacy law, which has been one thing that's changed a lot of things, both GDPR, California's Privacy Act, and every other state that seems to be in the process of creating one, we're starting to realize that it's an everybody problem. But I think if you, for those of us in the room, we've always known it's everybody else's problem. But I feel like that there's an awakening that's kind of happening at the same time, kind of like, yeah, I guess that we're kind of in it too. And for those of you running, whether it's like phishing campaigns or whatnot, you still realize that there's horrible, like, click-through rates, right? Like really basic things which have to do with behavior. I mean, it cracks me up. I've seen cases where, like, you put two-factor in place, and then they click on the link, and then accept the two-factor on a phishing kit, right? So I think that you just have to really focus on the behavior thing. And if I picked on one thing to kind of keep it top of mind, and not to pick on the Sony thing, but I think you could put in your mind many breaches or disclosures that you have, and this isn't going to be true for all of them, but I think if you read in the press on some of the things that happened at Sony, one of the questions you would say is like, oh, I saw that data was disclosed, and, how many people have seen, like, Marie Kondo, like, clean up your stuff, right? So this is, like, easy takeaway, you could use this at work, but, it's like, everything, make sure that you, first of all, only have the things that you need, and that they have a place to be, right? So I think the question I would have is, when you think of data that way, what data are you keeping, and is it where it's supposed to be? And if that data should be deleted, that's where it should be. And I think whether it's you finding out that there's data that has been put outside of the company, which means that you literally you can't see it, that's not where it's supposed to be. That's, those of us in the room aren't doing that. Right, and so we could do a pretty good job of protecting data where it's supposed to be, and so that would be kind of one of the thoughts I think on behavior side. I don't know what you guys are dealing with it, but that seems that's kind of usually my almost like my single biggest worry is data where it's not supposed to be.
Alex, also, I mean, this is something also you've dealt with I think a lot for longer than we have, right? We're reacting also to the California Data Protection Initiative, but GDPR has been this, kind of Y2K problem forever, right? And I remember some of our first conversations years ago about it, and it's like, but the reality is there's something there, and it's really a governance issue. I mean, is that something that you see also inside of BBC and or inside of studios?
I mean, kind of data is everywhere these days. Everything is digital. I mean, we have two kind of significant products that are generating a lot of consumer data. Firstly, it's the iPlayer in the UK, which is our streaming service, and then we have a JV here with ITV, which is BritBox. Oh, yeah. So GDPR came into effect May last year. It's placed many more obligations on us as a data controller in terms of, as you were saying, Eric, kind of what are you collecting? How long are you storing it for? What are you using it for? And then you have the Californian law, which is coming into effect kind of January next year. Yeah. And I think if I think about kind of where IT was when I first started working, kind of it was, you would call them because the printer wasn't working or you'd forgotten your password. But they are now so integral to everything that you do as an organization. And really, going back again to what you were saying, kind of whose responsibility is it? And it's everyone's. And it's making sure that the right people in the business are accepting the risk. So it's about visibility. It's about building security from the ground up, having it owned at the right level within the organization, giving board visibility of what you're doing, having risk registers, kind of having them owned by the right people in the business. And as I say, so that if there is a risk to be treated or it can't be treated, then the right person is accepting that risk.
Sure.
And Martin, you're dealing with the most sensitive of the sensitives, right? How much you make in your social security number, your home address, right?
So I mean, we know what everybody makes in this room. So. Yeah. So I've been a CISO for over 20 years now, and it was my first foray in the entertainment world. I think, when we kind of think about the cultural aspect of where security sits and how it operates in organizations, particularly in the entertainment industry, there's a bit of a growth opportunity, I think. I come from the defense world, where security's first thought, first model is security first. And that's not necessarily true in the entertainment industry. So what's important to us, and you kind of go back 20 years or so where security sat in the organizations, It was to the point, I think, you know, it was the guys in the back room making sure firewalls made were on and working. But in today's world, in not necessarily unique to the entertainment world, it's got to be security first. And it's everybody's problem in the organization. It's not just the security team that may be buried behind IT or in another group. It's got to be forefront. And where it sits in the organization, I think, is vital. It's got to have the visibility to the board, to, you know, from the janitor to the board. And everybody in between there has to see that as part of their job. Not just, we'll throw it over the security and let them deal with it kind of thing.
And we talked a little bit, you mentioned that kind of top-down policy. That's where we really focused. Does executive management have purview into your security policy? And what do they do? The reality, though, is as things have evolved, right, it's got to go down to the lowest of the low, right? And this isn't just information security. And in terms of employees and access and teams and enculturation, you know, and we see this obviously like on productions, right? I mean, yes, you know, the caterer has this, it's almost like it's driven by this, right? Pre-iPhone, it was a different landscape, right? And also, where does this go as well? I mean, I'm curious also in terms of the enculturation factor, right? In the terms of getting out there and having them understand. Not every, you know, of course, senior management knows about GDPR and all those things, but how do you get it? How do you trickle it all the way down? Is it tough?
Well, first of all, Ben should answer first, I think.
Are we taking turns?
His accent's so much better, and he looks like he should be the next James Bond. So.
I think there's some advantages of the advances in regulation relating to data security. There's some advantages in how security breaches, security topics are regularly front page news. I think that's as security executives that gives us an opportunity to get access to better funding. And also the appreciation is, just as you're saying, kind of the rubber hits the road element in terms of we need to learn as security practitioners how to interpret our security guidelines into layman's terms. It really is about not being at that kind of back office IT security function. Engaging with the business units, there shouldn't be a single one-size-fits-all security strategy. Security is not any one particular thing. It's really about identifying the data stores, the data, whatever these individual assets or workflows are, and having, ultimately, you need to, I think, for an effective security strategy, you need to have a plethora of separate security strategies that are modeled around the workflows and the data, and then ultimately really, really investing appropriately in the training, the awareness, the relationships with the business units. I think we benefit also from things like the advances of multi-factor authentication for social media platforms, or just these kind of overt security mechanisms in tools that people use day to day, and that's helpful because increases familiarity and comfort, and it makes it easier for us to start to incorporate those kind of security services that there've been a lot of friction, a lot of pushback on in the past. Many of the tools that are used in creative workflows or in enterprise workflows.
And I think you've hit the nail on the head there, which is kind of IT is much more agile these days. They are facilitators, enablers. And if you can get that sell into the business and kind of from directors down, because kind of if you think about kind of data protection law, the directors are the responsible ones. They're the ones on the hook. I mean, under GDPR, kind of a fine can be as much as 4% of global turnover. Now, that gets attention. I don't know what the fine structure is for California, but kind of we have seen some chunky fines dished out. Kind of we had Cambridge Analytica last year.
Yeah.
And we've suffered with kind of breaches and content security issues. And kind of much more beyond the fines. It's the fines can be dealt with. It's the reputation and the impact of that. And we've seen that. And I'm not going to mention the most famous of those. But it's making sure that kind of IT and security go hand in hand. And I used to work in a business where I just saw IT as I used to call them the business prevention unit.
Yes.
Because you would get, you'd go and ask them questions or ask for their support, and no, you can't do that. Right. But now it's about kind of getting things done. And I think it's, from a culture perspective, it's about making sure that everyone is understanding the strategy of the organization, what the objectives are for the year, and what part people play in that. And therefore, it makes those conversations, when they need to happen around security and technology, much easier, because everyone is on the same page. The other thing is that what I observe is vendors coming to the table with those security questions answered. Kind of that they are kind of already aware of their responsibilities to deliver secure solutions, and therefore, when we're doing our assessments or we need to talk about kind of how information is protected, kind of in the main, they're kind of, we've got this handled.
They're ahead of that curve, because that's also critical. You know, and I was thinking also in terms of what are the drivers for change, right? And it's obviously not breaches and leaks, right? That drives small change. You would think with something that happened ago that we would have all changed instantly and woken up and been like, wow, we have to do this now. But it's been a slow burn kind of since 2014, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like there was a lot of attention after the Sony cyber attack happened.
Yeah.
And that was great. And I think everyone still has attention to it. I feel like that we've gotten to a lull, and I've kind of just in the work that we do and talking to other colleagues, and I've kind of thought that, and I'm guessing everybody's seeing this problem, like we're dealing with a new problem of time that we haven't dealt with before. So we've talked about all this change that's happening in our industry. There's a tremendous, whether it's, if you think of it, it's like Agile hit the whole entire industry or some form of that, and everything is happening now so fast across everything continuously, that what I'm seeing is attention span to anything is dwindling. Oh. So I'm assuming everybody in the room is dealing with this at some level. It's like, hey, I have this project and whatnot, and it actually is getting difficult to get people in the room to make a decision or stay focused on it. So hopefully you have like an Agile team or something that's protected and get something done. But these things that are kind of company-wide, I think, are a little tougher. And then if the board has got a lot of stuff that they're dealing with, whether it's acquisitions or changes, I feel like that cycle is going faster.
Yep.
So time for dealing with these kind of fundamental things, like how do we protect our data? Even though, like, in some ways, the attention is better. There's, like, we see breaches, and that's better. I feel like the time factor is fighting against us. So there's a desire to, but I have no time. So I don't know, the things that are working, I'd be curious to see what you guys think about, but that have kind of been working, and we do like almost like behavior ops, which is, if it's like a big program that we're going to roll out, and it's, you know, whatever it is, it's a phishing campaign or policies and procedures, that's really tough. If we're getting it kind of more tied into their workflow, and if they do something, we change the behavior on the fly, that seems to be a little easier. So I don't know whether it's measurement or other things that very naturally keep this top of mind and evolve the behavior at the same time. I'm feeling like we're getting into some need for that. But I'm curious what you guys are.
It's a good point, because you can get lulled into a kind of false sense of security.
Yeah.
You haven't had a breach, therefore everything is fine. It's also kind of that state of continual improvement, making sure that you're checking that your policies and procedures are aligned with the business and are treating all the risks and making sure that you're able to measure kind of how deep into the business kind of your governance goes and there are various ways that we would like to do that. We don't do that right now, but it's we do lots of staff surveys which kind of talk about culture and things like that, but kind of something that we should be doing is kind of, do you understand kind of what to do in this kind of situation or whatever, because when something does happen, kind of there are lots of different kind of groups that you need to be able to reach out to and gather information from, who help in addressing incidents. It's not just one part of the business. So by keeping a good level of information and conversation going on, it just means that those conversations are easy when they need to happen.
Yeah, from a culture perspective, I think, to be frank, it's, you know, the conversations about Sony hacks or Equifax or whoever are big and scary and those kind of things. And that's a way to have a conversation with the leadership because they're, you know, it's the CNN effect. You see it on CNN, let's have a conversation, right?
Yeah.
But that's not really the best way to go. Selling fear and trying to deal from fear is not a good answer. You want, I do, at least as CISO, is to drive an enable model, right? To get people thinking about security in their day-to-day lives, whether it's at home, personally. A lot of what we do from a training perspective is also how do you protect your personal lives and those kind of things, because it gets people interested in thinking, right? But the selling fear model, you know, and even compliance, I know it's a little against the grain. Compliance models are great as a foundational framework to work from, but a lot of companies fall back to the idea of, well, I've got a SOC 2, therefore I'm secure, right? And we all know that's not true, right? So you can't check a box and say you're secure from a compliance perspective. Use it as an enabler. You use it as a way to frame your models, frame your business value propositions for security, and then achieve beyond that. But kind of just saying we're checking a box is not security. So.
Totally. And the other thing also is that check a box mentality, right? It doesn't necessarily progress. Right, and it doesn't. When you think about new product builds, you think about new enterprise integrations. You think those things really have to kind of speak to not only the technology and what task we're trying to solve, right? But also the business unit that's driving it, right? You know, legal has a different flow, so to speak, than IT, than does security. But security seems to be the common thread that has been at the forefront of driving all these business units. Transformation, and that's hence the title. I mean, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you kind of were alluding to that. I mean, to me right now, I feel that the privacy risk piece of it is as much of the dialogue as anything else. You know, thinking like, hey, great, we have to renew our insurance, and we really do, you know, how does what we're doing internally kind of match that? Or you talked about your trading partners, and you do get the verification list of what you're doing or not doing, and you're having to sign up in kind of in trading partners. So I feel like we're getting the focus on this from multiple different places at the same time.
But just a comment. I mean, the worst thing that happened, once again, my opinion, is the government telling us how to do something.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Exactly. So, you know, GDPR, CCPA,
That's
the government saying, well, business, you haven't done enough, and we're going to make the decision for you. So that whole privacy design models that you need to integrate for your products and your environments is getting ahead of that. So if you're trying to deal, once again, against the grain kind of comment, if you're trying to deal with CCPA as it's this big alarmist thing, it means you haven't done privacy by design.
Right.
And therefore, you should have anyways. So, you know, shame on the government for telling us what to do, but also thankful for them telling the business what to do as well.
Well, and CCPA, you know, in conjunction, GDPR also, when it first came out, it was also very prescriptive, right? I mean, it's serious, right? I mean, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
It is,
right?
Yeah.
Not only from a fines, but the process itself is, you know, you look at it and you're like, wow, it's almost overbearing in some aspects.
I think the only thing I was going to add to it, and I completely agree with you, just what you just said, Martin, which would be is, you know, I think all of us, when we work with other partners or vendors or software products or whatnot, we do our evaluation. You do your evaluation. You're probably involved in all of them, right? When EP is going to look to partner with something else with a software product, whatnot.
Ad nauseum.
Yes. Yeah, right? Yeah. So what is interesting, and I'll maybe tie that to the time thing, I am not seeing necessarily, even though I think maybe it's better, I have seen a couple cases, whether it's a startup company or whatnot, and you know what? The startup company, their number one and only goal is acquisition of customer.
Right.
And I hate to say it. You could ask questions in the case. They don't have someone focused on it. It is not their top priority, and you go through it. In certain cases, it's actually the best product on the market, and they can't actually answer the SOC 2 question. I'm not saying it should be fixed by law. I agree with Martin's statement. I think that the challenge is because of the time factor, maybe, or pressure, I see a mix in the marketplace. So what does make me nervous, I've seen a couple of them come across my desk, and they have like 1,000 customers, and I look at what they cannot do or cannot answer, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, who made the decision on the other, like how do they have these many customers? I'm assuming that you probably run into a couple of those, you know, along the way too. But.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think some of these bottoms up kind of frameworks and compliance, you know, a plug for TPN, will help, because it is a standard that companies can work from to get to a place. You know, SOC 2 has got a place for it. ISO is our framework that we chose. But, you know, it is kind of that minimum standard. But to your point, I think there's some, you know, both your points about getting, you know, agility, velocity out on these products is you forego some of the quality checks. And security is quality, and quality is security, right? So I think, you know, you got to really do that deep dive and understand your business value. And, you know, sometimes you kind of have to slow down a little bit.
And also on the studio side, you know, Ben, in your previous role, you were charged with kind of, you take things over, right, when you come on board at a business, and then you try to improve and you try to make your mark, make your stamp. But I know enculturation was a big focus around the products that you were putting out to studios, internal, right, to your productions ultimately. Do you feel that it was something also that trickled over? Were some of those things adopted by the enterprise group, and even though you were in studios, or did you work hand in hand with company? Or
I think maybe, again, in the studio side, we didn't have access to the resources and the workforce that some of the enterprise teams do, and that drove innovation. And kind of you referenced TPN. I mean, that's a way of looking for force multipliers, finding a way. I mean, certainly security transforms the enterprise. It is a key decision maker in any tool application service provider selection, is what is their security, whether it's a compliance-driven security posture or some other form. All of these service providers are looking a way to demonstrate that they meet whatever this nebulous best practice model is. So TPN introduces the reason that we sought to address this problem is to lay out a set of security requirements that are specific to our industries, specific to Hollywood, specific to all the different elements of filmmaking, and all the different work that we do as studios. So I think, yes, the way that drive to deduplicate effort, to have industry best practices, standards, and these kite marks that allow service providers to demonstrate their conformity against security requirements that are specific to our industry, that is definitely something that has caught the attention of other enterprise teams that I've worked with. There are models like maybe the credit card industry, PCI
yeah.
model that are similar, or certain portions of the ISO programs. But yes, that you know, finding a way to come to a consensus, bring together all of your peers, consolidate your security requirements. Security assessment work is expensive, so how do you find a way to be frugal and save costs associated with demonstrating?
Yeah, no. I was going to add in there also that whole idea of we create standards and we create, you know, programs and platforms within our industry also to get over that overarching law, right? Because the law has to also evolve, and you're dealing with politicians, and it's got to be written so that it's broad enough to deal with, you know, in GDPR's case, the entirety of Europe. You know, California is its own little country, but the idea is also at the business level or at the industry level, it's also up to us to be proactive and self-regulate and develop those things, whether it's individual companies or groups of companies, or to make sure that we don't have them come down to that local level and try to get involved in this. This is interesting.
Yeah, could I just add one thing
to
that? And hopefully our CISOs will appreciate it, and I'll get out of the way. So I had an interesting industry dinner last night, and one of the guys that was there was actually the CISO for Rand Corporation. I'm like, thank God I don't have that job. Like, I mean, you had the top of they have like a gigantic target around their back, right? But it's a big part of that in the long conversation we had was a couple of things that kind of came out from universally everybody. It's like, hey, great, it's a board level conversation. And universally everyone said, yes, and the board literally does not understand this problem.
Interesting.
That this is, and the reason is it's too complicated for them to understand. They didn't grow up as technologists. They don't know the depth of the problem, and it's too complicated for them to understand. And then it's like, hey, great, the senior leadership team. They don't understand the problem. It's beyond what their training is. They can kind of conceptually understand risk, but they actually don't fully understand the problem. And I think what I was just going to throw out to the group, which is I'm in a CIO organization, but to the CISOs, and maybe back to the fact the CIO or the IT organization used to be the business preventative group, but look, those of us in this room, if you manage data, you track data, you collect data, you transport data, you are the leaders of this problem. It is a worldwide problem, and no one else other than the people in this room are going to do something about it, and all of us together, I have to work together on it, because it's not just the CISO's problem.
No.
And every one of us is touching it at one place or the other, and it's from how we engineer the applications right from the beginning, and I love how you said it, is quality through the behavioral changes that we have to champion all the way through the organization, and it is nobody else but us to champion the problem.
Alex, you had a closing?
Just a couple of points from me. I mean, when something happens, when you see a report about something that's happened to a business or an organization that's in the news, kind of the best question that I can be asked from my board is, could this happen to us? Because it means they're paying attention and they care. On the flip side of that, I think when you've got a compliance and governance program which is managing security risk, kind of your approach has always got to be proportionate to the risk that exists.
Yeah.
So we have, on the content side, we have photographers who work on kind of highly sensitive content, but they're working out of their bedroom. Kind of, they don't have the resource, they don't have the budget, and therefore we have to assess what that risk is and just treat it as far as we can. So it's really about having that visibility of all of the risks, and then it's kind of saying, okay, we as an organization are happy with the level of risk, because we find that is the best way to get engagement and keep things moving along and not getting back to that business prevention type.
I also think, and we're totally out of time. I knew we would just get going the minute that we're out of time. But I also think that that's where technology plays such an incredible role, and also where tradition, much as IT has kind of it's no longer this separate group of passwords and printer access and network access, right? It's ingrained in almost every business unit and every process, right? It always comes back to IT, and this is kind of how we formed HITS. But the idea that we can use technology and how our approach is with those, well, we'll call them mom and pop small people. Like right now, it's still so separated. We don't even really have the tools. They haven't really been created to bring them into that IT enterprise, but remotely. Right, so that the idea is you're lifting them up by giving them a tool and giving them a process that's part of your workflow, and inviting them into your already more baked and more funded security culture. I think that's where we're ultimately heading. So when you think 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the road, it's like you're going to have that kind of sphere of trust, and you'll be inviting people into it. And it's only the technology, you know, I'll reference the quantum computing thing as well, right? Technologies like that are like, okay, this is something deeper than MFA or, sending a text to a cell phone and making sure that this is the quote-unquote that person. So, exciting. Thank you. I appreciate it. We had to come back from lunch. Give these guys a round of applause. We'll see Ben and we'll see Eric on the Male Allies panel during the WITH portion of the program, but thank you, gentlemen.